Chapter 6 Lurien's initial dislike for Prince Nael had been a starting offer. On further consideration, he was quite prepared to be haggled up towards loathing. The Elgar Knight set a challenging pace, entirely disregarding the fetters around his guest's ankles and the Namatai spears at his back. He swam through the luminous colonnades of the Low City, the slave quarters of Elgaen living up fully to Eodrin's boast of being the Jade Palace's rival in beauty. He swam up towers that gleamed with light and life, sometimes within them, sometimes around, but always, Lurien suspected, for the simple joy of being an arrogant Fuethain. His armed entourage passed from spire to spire via the exquisite bridges that linked them, all a part of the same pearlescent body. They had to be follies, statements of Elgaean's wealth and her Corallus's skill. The Eidoneth had no need of bridges, except perhaps as a signpost for where each doorway lay.
"I am so glad that you gave such consideration to how you would announce yourself," Namariel hissed, swimming with ankles similarly fettered, her legs held together like the tail of a fish.
Lurien did not answer her. He had hoped to be able to leave her with the mantle garrison along with Eodrain and the others, and clear up this small misunderstanding with Larimée alone. But Namariel had insisted. Suspicious of what Lurien might ask of his mighty Isharan aunt, were she not in the room, no doubt. And Nael, Mathlan forsake him to shallow waters, had acceded. The Elgar Knight threw open a set of lustrous doors, and a pair of spear Namatai ushered Lurien and Namariel in after him. Four more with whisper bows followed. Another pair of spears closed the doors behind them. A pair of extravagantly tattooed Lanmari thralls stood guard over the far door with arms crossed over the sculpted musculature of their chests. Nael swam across to confer with them. Lurien watched the exchange with a curled lip. The White Knight betrayed his weakness, either that or his insecurity in his station. Why else would he care to be so courteous with his slave warriors? The prince turned back.
"This is Alovar Hall."
Nael looked up to the conch-shaped ceiling. Glowstones had been set into the nacre, giving a lustre that seeped through the structure of the walls, whites glowing whiter against the darker oil-slick bands of yellow, grey and brown appearing against it. Shelves grew organically from the walls. Flowering algae overspilled rustic shell vases, bijou fishes picking at the buds until the elves' approach startled them into the foliage.
"Named for my great-grandmother, she was a Corallus from Briamdar and raised the first tower in Elgaen. It wasn't actually this one," he pointed. "It was over there."
"Fascinating," said Lurien.
"Your great-grandmother?" said Namariel. "The first queen of Elgaen, of course," said Nael, "before Larimée and Lusan."
"Of course," Lurien nodded, feigning familiarity with that branch of his adopted lineage. "So, I have a cousin now, do I?"
"Oh, yes."
The Lanmari thralls threw open the inner doors, and Nael kicked himself into a climb. His warrior's spears ensured that Lurien and Namariel followed. There were, of course, no stairs, no windows. Colours blurred through the spire's walls in accordance with the lights outside.
"Larimée took me into her family after my father and sister died in battle, leaving me the last of my house."
Nael peeled off from the spiralling ascent and swam into a passageway.
"I had some reputation here in Elgaen, and with your mother fading, Larimée felt it prudent to secure her line."
With no sign yet of being out of breath, he took the pearl handle of an unguarded door and pushed it open. "They do call her Larimée the Wise," said Lurien.
"With just reason," said Nael.
"I always thought so." Nael turned back to the open doors.
Through here is the
tides of Gealrakai.
Lurien sighed and pushed past the embarrassed warrior.
It is the White Haven, modelled after the great palaces of Teclis in Leiriu. I know where we are. I've been here before, remember?
The thrall warriors behind him bristled, but Lurien ignored them. He reasoned that if they were going to kill him, they would probably have done it somewhere other than on the pristine white tiles of Larimée's antechambers. He swam inside. The brightness was devastating. Looking back on his old life in the Jade Palace, viewed from the perspective of an elf who might now think little of a spell in the dungeons or a trek across open ocean, he was almost embarrassed by the luminous halo in which he had existed. It was nothing compared to this. This was the antithesis of what Isharan ascetics sought in the deep ocean, and what purists like Anair sought to recreate in their palaces. It was the obliteration of the senses through excess rather than denial. The enormous caryatid figures spaced along the walls could have been representations of the Asur pantheon. There were enough of them, but they could have been almost anything at all for all that Lurien could make them out. The scripture on the panelled walls above them blazed brilliantly golden, beyond the capacity of elven eyes to read. 1,000 captive souls burned in that chamber, emitting a radiance that neither beauty nor malice could endure. Nor did he notice the 2 heavily muscled Namatai insensates before they grabbed him by the wrists and shoulders. That, he decided, was a deliberate effect.
"You were always talking yourself into trouble, Lurien," said the light.
Lurien squinted into it, just succeeding in convincing himself of the existence of a throne at the far end of it, with blazing glass above.
"Your mother despaired, but I told her she worried over nothing. The kind of trouble that can be talked into, I said, is the kind that can be talked out of, and the skill of one is much the same as the other."
The chamber sighed.
"And still they call me Larimée Farseer. Not for much longer, I think. Words are the knife that one learns to use with impunity. But Van Glyer took one cut of the tongue too many, did he not? Galra here, and Anir too, I suspect."
Lurien shook his head. "I never..." The throne issued an impatient snort.
"There is some edge yet to these wits, but my ears have not been those of a young elf for a century and a half. Bring him closer."
The Namatai dragged Lurien forwards.
"Well, don't coddle me. My whim orders sea and tide. Do you think the lash of an unwise nephew's tongue threatens me at my age? Unhand him. Go on. Back with you."
The command was less a spoken one than a magical imperative, a coalescing of the ether sea into a shove that propelled the 2 thralls towards the back wall of the chamber. The strength of the edict diminished where it brushed across Lurien, between them, but only because the greatest tidecaster still living in the Green Gulch had willed it so. Larimée could just as easily have bidden the water in the chamber to repel from him, leaving him breathless and gasping in a bubble of air, or to crush him like a Corlep grape between her fingers. Niel lowered himself to one knee. Namariel hesitated, then quickly did the same. Lurien was not sure any more if it was out of genuine respect or fear, or both. But unlike Lurien, she was blind enough to the light to actually see what was sitting in front of them. Lurien started to lower his knee.
"Not you. Come closer."
He did. The brightness reduced as he drew nearer to its source, as though he swam through a tunnel of reflective glass. Queen Larimée was at its end, enthroned in light. She wore a crown of white fire and a silver breastplate that exaggerated her feminine physique. She was older than Lurien remembered her. Her skin glowed like a paper lantern, and her eyes were glassy and white. But if age had diminished her physically, it had failed utterly to dim her power. Lurien bowed his head as she pushed herself from her throne and drifted towards him. Her fingertips brushed his shoulders.
"Nephew,"
she said, then embraced him in the tentative manner of the Idoneth, as though she were made of paper and he was covered in spines. Lurien returned it, hesitantly at first, but with a tired swell of relief that soon had him crushing his aunt to his chest.
"Enough of that,"
Larame brushed him off. A grin flickered over Lurien's face. He glanced down towards his manacled feet. "I was starting to fear I was unwelcome." Larame tilted her head towards the thralls, still hovering behind Lurien's back, and the warriors duly melted towards the far corners.
"Briamdar's soul scryers have been watching for you, like Alopexes tasting the water for blood. I thought you might come here, as Van Glyer did, and told Niall to greet you in the manner he did."
"My apologies for the deception, cousin," said Niall with a bow.
"Are they still watching?"
"If you think there is an Isharan alive in Briamdar or anywhere else who can breach the wards of my sanctuary, you would have been better served in Duihor. I hear they tolerate Malachi there."
She sniffed, apparently pondering the strange derangement to which all Deepkin were prone, but those of Duihor more than most. The taint of their incarceration marked every soul liberated from the belly of Slaanesh, lending that soul to a debauchery and madness that only withdrawal and self-denial could hope to delay. It was something the subject of the Laughing King seemed to have neglected in recent years.
"Lagithe might have possessed the strength to do it, but even she did not have the nerve to try."
With her fingertips, Larame gave him a shove.
"Insolent boy."
"Then you know what happened at the Assembrol?"
"Of course I know. Van Glyer is not the only elf with soul scryers, and word travels faster than a troop of fools over the ocean floor. Tidecasters from Briamdar have been and gone, and then been again. The soul scryers have sent word to their fanes as far as Turak and Duihor."
She shook her head at him, the same Aunt Larame who would encourage his childish misdemeanours and then chide him when he was careless or stupid enough to be caught.
"Imagine telling Galra here to his face, and on the eve of your own coronation, no less, that his enclave raids too often. Why not just try to pull the tonsils from the Alopex's mouth while your arm is down there? And did you think you could defy your mother so brazenly and so often that the Archelian Council would not notice? Or were you simply too young and stupid to care?"
She glanced at Niall and sniffed.
"And they tell me the Knights of Elgaen are arrogant."
Lurien lowered his head. A scolding from Larame Farseer had always cut deeper than Lagithe's more corporal attempts at discipline. "I see that now."
"It is easy to see the Lurkinarth from inside its belly, and some good it does you," she sighed. "As much as having your failings pointed out to you after the fact, I suppose."
She snapped her fingers at Niall.
"My son, arouse yourself. You may meditate on the meaning of nothing in your own chambers. Summon a platter from the kitchens, anything will suffice, and a ewer of Corlep with flutes for my nephew and me."
"Yes, mother."
Niall straightened, bowed, then departed. Lurien drew no small pleasure in seeing the prince dismissed like some common thrall. Larame sat back in her crystal throne. She lifted her gaze to Namariel. Her eyes narrowed. Lurien was uncertain what troubled her. only that Laramie Farseer perceived much that even the greatest of Isharan could not. The lines of her face drew into a frown.
Elgain will not be a haven for you for long, nephew, but I can keep you in safety for a few tides, at least. Tell me, what would you have me do to help you?
I would have your support against Vanglai Felglave. The White Queen sighed.
I feared as much.
Lurien frowned at his reflection. The mirror was a flattened teardrop of highly polished nacre, its dark frame inscribed with delicate runes. It was one of a dozen in the shop, but the only one currently showing a face. He'd lost weight. His jawline was sharper, the taper of his ears and chin more pronounced. There were blue rings around his eyes and a hollowness that he did not recall ever seeing in his reflection before.
"Are you sure these are the colours you desire, Lord?"
The Namatai tattooist presented the two hollowed-out shells of ink with his own hollow face downturned. "That's what I asked for," Lurien said. "Get on with it. I have a raid to lead." The Namatai draped a seagrass shawl over his shoulders and began to scrub the salt and grit of the open ocean from Lurien's scalp with a placid urchin brush. Lurien watched his long face grimace in the mirror. "Lead a raid," she says. "Lead a raid, and then she'll support me."
"Put yourself in her position," said Namariel.
The Namatai floated by one of the window ovals overlooking the Sibylline Gardens below. Idoneth travelled from across the Green Gulch to admire the garden's austere splendour, and the Idoneth were not a people to travel idly. Their baffling statuary reflected the deep cold of an alien mind, the physical abstraction of its slow thoughts. Meditating on their shapes was said to be one of the more potent soporifics in the mortal realms. Lurien meant to try it before he left. Eodraine was already down there. What a sightless Namatai drew from the experience he could not imagine.
"Her point of view," he said.
"You have never led a raid," she said, turning from the oval. "You have never even been on a raid. Neither has Eodraine. She, meanwhile, is effectively on the doorstep of the most feared raid lord in the gulch. I told you Elgain was too close, my prince, and that no one, not even beloved Aunt Laramie, was going to help you without asking for something in return."
"But she isn't even asking me for something. She's giving me a hoop."
"A test."
Lurien sneered towards her reflection.
"One blind eye sees just the same as another. It is a hoop."
"Please hold still, Lord," murmured the tattooist.
Lurien felt a prick against the back of his head. He winced.
"How does one even go about organising a raid anyway? In Briandar, Vanglair or one of the other great Archelian would announce their intention to raid. Then they would take their plans to an assembly of the Azadrazor and make offerings to the sanctuary of Mathlan. After that, warriors would come forward to pledge their swords and thralls and, well, it just seems to happen."
"My prince, my love,"
Namariel smiled sweetly, a faint deflection in the imperfect mirror.
"You are not going to be organising any raids."
"And who will? You?"
"No, what I mean is that there will be no raid."
"But Laramie..."
"Aunt Laramie has promised her support in exchange for a task she knows you cannot perform."
"I can, and I will."
The reflection of Namariel shook its head.
"You are a warrior without reputation, my love. You can declare your intention and target, but no one will join you. The White Queen knows this full well."
Her voice sounded almost admiring of the Isharan's political cunning.
"So she was getting rid of me?"
As graceful as a sea spider repositioning its legs, Namariel kicked off from her place by the window and swam towards him. Lurien kept his gaze on his own reflection. The tattooist changed needles.
"Do you think even Van Glyer commanded on his first raid?"
Namariel said.
"If you want your aunt's allegiance, you are first going to have to make a reputation."
"You mean?"
Lurien hesitated.
"Avail myself of another lord's raid? Like any other Arcelian?"
Namariel patted his shoulder.
"I hate to be the bringer of this news, my prince, but any other Arcelian is what you now are. Eodraine would be fortunate to be thought of even as highly as that."
She lowered her lips to the back of Lurien's head and drew in a breath through her nose.
"You know, I have no sense of colour, but I can smell the pigment."
"Turquoise and gold. It was how my head was dressed the day Van Glyer took my throne from me. I left the headdress in the dungeons of Briamdar, but when I saw the tattoos that Nael and the other Elgonites wear, well, the idea came to me."
Lurien glared into the sallow pits of his reflection's eyes. "I thought I'd wear royal colours into battle until the throne was mine again. I thought that... Never mind. Doesn't matter now, does it? How does an Arcelian go about finding himself a..."
He bit his lip to stifle a grimace. "Lord?
Perhaps I need to talk about this with Eodraine."
"No need, my prince,"
said Namariel, patting his stinging crown.
"I've already approached an acclaimed warrior of Elgaean, one who happens to have an interest in seeing you succeed, and an inexplicable regard for you personally. He's already in preparation for a raid and would welcome you and Venom into his Ishlaean guard. Eodraine as well. Mathlan protect us all."
"Who is this knight? He sounds like a gift from the gods."
Namariel smiled.
"No," said Lurien. "No, not him."
"He leads 30 Arcelian on the Isurian Cape, far to the south."
She fussed over the sit of Lurien's cerecloth, adjusting the barber's shawl as he stared, unseeing, at his reflection in the nacre.
"I hear it is cold there, so wear Moragai's cloak. And try not to die.